Ghetto Boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded, the disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it, cause we wrote it. The north, south, the east coast, it's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt, they throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB, don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface is in the building. Collectively,
right.
We are the Ghetto Boys.
Reloaded.
Reloaded with another episode of Information and Instructions. To help us out today, the one and only 2 Chainz is in the building.
Yeah.
What's up?
Man, you know what, man? When I think of you, the first thing that comes to my mind more than anything is intelligent.
Man.
Thank you.
You're a sharp dude, bro. Yeah. And I know a lot of people, they don't get it because they hear the music and they just think, oh, he's just another rapper.
And
dude,
I told him a long time ago, man, when Chainz first came out, I'm sorry, when he first came out, I kept telling him, I say, man, don't get it fucked up. That nigga can rap.
Yeah.
I wish a nigga would like a kitchen cabinet.
Oh, man.
Hey, man.
What came first, man? The rapping or the basketball?
Oh, no, definitely basketball, man. Still my favorite thing to look at and participate in. I've been playing ball since I was about 7 years old. Started at MLK, just like a lot of inner city kids, you know what I'm saying?
You can probably beat me, huh?
Nah, I can't fuck with you, man. I probably beat you in basketball. I know you got hands with the boxing.
No, I'm talking about basketball, man. I don't even fight no more. I'm too small to fight.
You don't fight no more?
Fuck no. I got a gun.
You ain't playing.
And I know how to get away with it. But like I was saying.
You got to talk to me. I love basketball. But basketball kind of set me up for the rap. It definitely set me up for rap because, you know, the person that gets the ball or has the ball the majority of the time is, you know, who people look at. And I started, you know what I'm saying, using that correlation with the microphone. Like, you know what I'm saying, you got the mic, everybody going to look. And I enjoyed that attention. I enjoy, you know what I'm saying, the whole entertainment aspect. So it became second nature for me.
You know, you put on a hell of a motherfucking show, right?
Thank you.
And you're not like a kid, but you got a lot of fucking energy. And watching you on stage make me tired.
Yeah, man. Well, it's important in my field of work to give the promoter and give the fans something to look at. So when it's time to think about booking another show or thinking about doing something else, that I'm a name that pops up in the conversation, and that in turn puts money in my pocket, that put food in my family's mouth. So I get that, you know what I mean? So I don't care if it's 40 or 40,000. I have to put on a real show. Yeah, because it's always somebody filming, and people that watch it on the internet, they don't know that. You know, a lot of us really, as entertainers, we feed off the energy, but I have to psych myself out sometime and just bring my own energy.
Nah, you dope, bro. I've been knowing you since, what, 99 or?
Maybe like 2001, something
okay,
like that.
Okay, 2001, yeah.
You was doing Def Jam South, and I was with Luda them. It was probably later, maybe over 2.
How did it go with Luda?
Everything went well. I see him occasionally, you know what I'm saying? He's doing real well in life.
No, how'd it go when you were with DTP?
Oh, yeah. So I was selling weed. And,
goddamn, Chainz.
And they were working on the radio, so I used to be serving like rappers that came to the city, you know what I'm saying? Niggas who's come to the city, they used to call me to serve them. And my little crew, you know what I'm saying? We were getting a few little bags, and so we decided to put like a little mixtape together.
Yeah.
And when it was Chris and Poon, they was on the radio. When they heard the mixtape, they were fucking with a nigga. Dope. So they already knew what I did in the streets, and they knew what apartments.
Apartment.
Yeah, like.
You know, that always got me, man. I always ask you, man, what the fuck is apartment? over there, out there slanging by the apartments.
Our apartments.
apartment. They call it apartment.
Yeah, we've been.
I always tease them about that.
We've been took the A off.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, I started rapping with them. Titty Boy, you know, a little rough around the edges, you know what I'm saying?
Nah, he was always dope to me, man. Yeah. I always appreciated your work. And then when you went out with, and was it the Duffel Bag Boy? Was that the first? Yeah, went the fuck off on that. And you was on, shit. It's a song that you had, man. It was you and another kid. I'm gonna find it. I got it in my thing. But you know when I be listening to your shit and it be jamming hard as fuck, you know I text you and send you. Yeah.
You do text me some lines. Yeah. That makes me feel real good, man.
Nah, man, I told him a long time ago, man, do not get it fucked up. Yeah, get your ass in the studio if you fuck with him, man. You gotta listen to him. Yeah. You know, you gotta listen to it. But I'm a fan, bro. And I appreciate everything you did, bro. You know, I saw the come up. You know, it's different when you meet a motherfucker and he already up. But I watched your come up, man, and I just congratulate you, man, on every move and what you're doing, bro.
Thank you, man.
Success, bro. Much love to that.
Thank you. I really appreciate
it. And we appreciate you coming up.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very appreciative of that. You know what I mean? You guys know y'all legends. I met Bill before, you know, in Atlanta.
Don't tell Willie that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Man, would you get off that shit, man?
What do you mean?
Stop that shit, man.
Yeah.
Stop doing shit like that, man.
Yeah. Y'all been on the road since what age y'all? What age y'all start doing?
We've been on the road long enough.
Was y'all teenagers or in y'all early 20s?
No, we were teenagers. I was way teenager. Willie might
y'all
have been.
Went on the road as teenagers, right?
I was a teenager.
Yeah.
I was a baby.
I was like 22, 23.
Yeah. And Willie was.
Y'all went on road together, like out of town together. Yeah, shared rooms.
Me and Willie shared a room in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it got to a point where, you know, Willie was just fucking, like, I was like, you know what, man? I'm going to get my own shit, dog.
Say, first of all, since you see, when he do shit like that,
I'm just playing with
the motherfucking go in,
yeah,
right?
I can tell y'all got tricked.
I'm gonna go off where you show off.
I didn't do nothing, Willie.
Come on, take this goddamn spanking. So the reason why he has his own, he started getting his own room, was because he likes to fart a lot.
All that is some bull ass shit.
And yeah, see, come you want to lie? I gotta
come on,
lie.
Willie.
You gotta lie.
Come on,
I gotta
Willie.
Lie. Well, stop lying. I won't
man.
Lie. Stop
hey,
that lying. Now, man, the bottom line is that, man, we grew.
We just got grown, man.
We grew. The group got stronger. You know, we got more money.
Yeah. And then we got our own fucking room.
That's
what really happened.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to get too far away from the basketball, man, because I'm actually fascinated by your game, bro. Like, that. Your skills, I mean, watching you play, like, I'm looking at you like, if I was watching you today, I'm like, well, I know that guy went to the league. And, you know, obviously you didn't go to the league. You pursued rap. Mm-hmm. But how strong was your desire to become an NBA player?
Okay, so the thing with me is when the teacher asks kids what they want to be when they grow up, I used to say basketball because I never pictured myself being a doctor, just having a 9-to-5. Or I never pictured myself sitting in traffic in the morning on the way to work or coming home, just from a personal perspective. I don't knock anybody who does that, but I never saw myself doing that. It was never an ambition.
Different strokes for different folks, yeah.
It was never an ambition of mine. So I've also been trapping or, you know, selling drugs since I was in the 7th grade, you
God
know what
damn.
I mean? And so
you
I
were selling drugs in high school, man?
I got
you
locked
was.
Up my 9th grade year for
you
selling.
Was.
No, I'm sorry. My 10th grade year for selling.
Sweets.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, my 10th grade year for possession of cocaine. And
God
then my
damn, Chase.
Sophomore year for selling weed. I mean, no, my senior year of high school, I'm sorry, for selling weed. And so that messed up a lot of my scholarship opportunities playing ball.
Young Bucks, listen.
Yeah, no, definitely listen. But I can always tell you, like, if you live long enough, you can see, like, another side to it. So a lot of the mistakes that I made earlier, although I felt like they were very dark times for me, and I can go into depth by a lot of things, but I'm just trying to use this time wisely. I end up using those experiences to be, you know what I mean, to just, I learn from them, you know, mm-hmm. and that's the main thing about when they say living to learn. It's a lot of cliches that I feel like I can relate to. So I used to love basketball, but when I played basketball as a kid, I still was literally hustling. Me and one of my homies named Shy, we used to take turns hooping. Like one day he'll stay at the trap and then I'll go hoop, and then the next day it will switch out. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't all the way dedicated with hooping. I had natural skills and I played ball, like God-given talent, and I played ball. And mm-hmm. you know what they say about hard work beats talent and all of that stuff. Yeah. So I was one of those talented people who, if somebody was hooping more than me, then they would probably get a higher skill set because I was taking days off during this time. Mm-hmm. Now, when this music fell in my lap, when I first started doing music, it wasn't consistent. I kind of was one foot in, one foot out, the same thing, hustling, making music, going on the road, Slick, looking for a plug when I was on the road.
At this point, you had given up on basketball.
Yeah, at this point, yeah, I wasn't into basketball like that anymore because I had found a new love doing music, you know what I'm saying? Okay. So when I was able to go on the road and travel, like I asked y'all about traveling, my whole thing going to cities was trying to find out who had work, you know what right. I'm saying? Like I still hadn't right. really like turned that part of me off.
Right.
And then I went on tour with Wayne during Duffel Bag Boys, and I basically saw what he did every night, and I started mimicking that from that point on, and mm-hmm. my whole career, life, everything has changed. So I've always kind of attributed, bruh, for doing the record Duffel Bag Boys, and also, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, opening up my eyes to what I need to do to be a successful rapper, entertainer.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing to see, man, because I seen so many people that have a great talent in the hood who lose those opportunities because they don't want to get out of the streets. You know, they want to go and be the regular dude who take the easy way out and try to sell drugs or jack
that's
somebody,
really,
rob
really,
somebody, steal.
Easy.
Huh?
Really, that's not that easy.
Well, I think it is because anybody can do it. You know,
that's bullshit.
A five-year-old can steal. A five-year-old can shoot you. You know, a five-year-old can sell drugs.
I don't believe that.
Well, I've seen it. I believe it. I've seen it firsthand, and you know, and you've heard stories about 5-year olds shooting people.
I
you know,
have
and being used to sell drugs.
I don't think a 5-year old can rock up no dope, Willie.
Well, I don't know, man. These 5-year olds today, bro. I wouldn't underestimate them.
And I'm so detached from the dope game until you know, it's just far fetched for me to believe shit like that. But you know. If you say you seen it, you know I'm gonna believe
you. Yeah, I seen it. I seen it firsthand, man.
I've never seen it. I couldn't even think of who the fuck would he sell it to, and why wouldn't a nigga just push him down and take his dope?
Yeah. Well, those type of things happen sometimes, but a lot of times, you know, that the kid is being used as a conduit. So that kid, he don't know. But what that person on the other end knows is that kid got protection.
I'm gonna tell you this though. I'm gonna tell you from this perspective because a lot of people feel like, you know, man, don't take this out of context. That hustling is a choice. When a lot of the times, you know, it is a choice. But
I look at it like this.
I want y'all to just try to fathom this. I've definitely done some things that I regret. So just listen to this. Like, you stay in a neighborhood, right? Okay, I'm not from LA or California, right? And when I was younger, being from the South, I did not understand concept of gangs. I didn't even understand, you know what I'm saying? Right. Why are they, you know what I'm saying, doing this? But it's really based when I get older, like they neighborhood, this is where they from, this is like a brotherhood, they start blah, 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 whatever you want to make it out to be, whether good or bad, right? Mm-hmm. You go to Denver, Colorado, right? It's just like the whole neighborhood, they know how to ski, right? Because they raised on slopes and stuff like this, right?
Okay.
You go to Hawaii, right? You know what I'm saying? Everybody know how to surf out there. You know what I'm saying? They know how to surf, whether it's a good thing or what this what they do, right?
Right.
You go to Atlanta or you go to these apartments, the whole apartment sell drugs or trap. Now what happens in these cases is you automatically pick up, you're a sack too. But it's always somebody you see talent in that you try to prevent them from doing that in this certain neighborhood. But 9 times out of 10, this is looked at as a norm a way to take care of your family. And it may sound like bullshit. It may sound like, I don't know what it may sound like to people, but if you come up and this is all you see, this is all you know, I'm not sure what the main thing in Houston or whatever, but if this is all you know, like where I come from, then it takes a minute for you to snap or for you to plug up into reality, because you your mama, your daddy, bro, yo, everybody doing this. Don't nobody look at, like, the whole neighborhood missing antennas because Jay's smoking in front of you. Like, this is what you used to, the hallway full of crack, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? This is what's going on, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like you don't get to ride through Beverly Hills until you get some. You ain't never been on no plane before. So, like, all the other shit just on TV. So for people who have went through these different things, and it's, it might be a setup from the man or the government, whatever the hell they be saying, but, like, when you come up in a certain area for a long period of time and this is all they do, then it becomes so natural for you that you got to break the chain. You got to break it yourself, or go to jail, or really learn your lesson. And that's kind of what happened in my instance. I just did it until I woke up one day and just went cold turkey. I didn't want to have a case. I didn't want to have anything going on to make me press stop. I just did it on my own.
Shit, well, to answer your question, Chains, I think that the dope game was national. I think that the same way that y'all played in Atlanta, they played in Chicago, and they played in Houston, and they played in D.C. Like, the plague of crack cocaine, when it hit in the mid-'80s, early-'80s, you know, that shit spread it like this fucking pandemic that we have going on right now. Now, I was the same kid that you were, in a sense, because I sold the same, I did the same thing, okay? My uncles, my shit was so fucked up until I didn't give a fuck who I sold to.
Yeah, I ain't gonna go into all that.
Yeah, I sold to my uncles, my friends, my friends' mamas and shit. I didn't give a fuck. But that crack plague, man, just really set us in a space in life where we did more harm to ourselves than we got money on it. You know, we didn't do good. You know, I feel fucked up about the shit that I did growing
that's
up.
That's what I'm saying. That's
but I was 13, 14, 15 years old.
Yeah, I think we are who we are by conditioning. You know, if you grow up in a household where education is not stressed, then nobody's going to bat an eye when you drop out in the eighth grade, because it's expected, you know? If you grow up in a household where education is a big deal, then nobody's going to bat an eye when you graduate high school. You graduate high school, nobody's going to be like going crazy, losing their minds when you graduate high school. Mm-hmm. You know, like, if you ever watch people who graduate, you know, who go to these, that come up in these households where education is stressed, when people go to the graduation, they're like this. It's very, you know, like, yeah. You know, that's what, you know why we clapping like this? Because I'm sitting there thinking, college next. Mm-hmm. I ain't going, like it's the end. Like, oh, yeah, we made it. Oh, my baby. I ain't doing all that shit. I'm like, yeah, got their ass, one down. Next, college. Or next, this business this business thing we about to do. We about to blow, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it is. And so it's like Pavlov's law. We are who we are
Pavlov.
By a process of conditioning. And if I don't give a damn who you are, like you were saying, positive or negative or however you want to look at it, indifferent. We are who we are by a process of conditioning.
Sure.
But the thing is that ultimately, one thing that I knew growing up in the hood, just like everybody in this room, I understood early on that I was going to be held accountable for my actions. I knew that because I went to jail in 10th grade. I mean, when I was 10 years old.
Damn.
So for a burglary.
10 years old.
At 10 years old. I was in juvenile. I'm on, so the record is downtown. You know, so I knew early on that I was going to be held accountable for whatever I did. And ultimately, nobody really gives a fuck. Mm-hmm. And so if I go out there and do something, I'm not going to be able to use, well, you know, my mom was an alcoholic, my daddy was abusive, this happened, and I ain't got no money, whatever. Them people don't give a damn. So ultimately, I have to give a damn about myself and care more about myself to make sure that I don't walk into those traps and I don't allow these clowns to capture me and do me dirty, because the traps are set for us. They don't give a damn about us. We know that. So if we know that, then I feel like it's incumbent upon each of us to say, you know what? I'm not going to let you motherfuckers fool me. You're not going to get me. Like, if we know these motherfuckers are out here trying to do us dirty and they're trying to capture us.
But that's when we try.
You know, like, we got to do, it's, at some point, we have to say, you know what? This is on me. It's on me. You're not going to get me.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, we're going to try to outsmart anything that obstacle put in front of us. But, I mean, it's just hard for me to go against that, to be so contradicted when I know where I came from, when I know what I, you know, did and can't undo. And I got reasons that may be, they may be pathetic or they may make sense to some people. And I don't even want to be feel like getting judged today, but
man, you did what you had to do.
You know, for the most part, I'm a better person than I was yesterday. So yeah. I've been thinking like that for years, you know what I'm saying? And it takes conditioning, you know what I'm saying? And even when I was hustling, I enjoyed going to school. I enjoyed wearing nice things. I enjoyed, you know, being a social butterfly, talking, engaging, meeting new people. And, you know, I went to college. I have a college degree. I did all
of
those.
Damn, you got
things.
A college degree in what?
Psychology.
Alabama State University, here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For real?
Yeah. Well, when you know better, you do better, to your point.
Damn.
When you know better, you do better. And you knew, at some point, you knew better. And you started doing better. All I'm saying is that ultimately, like, we all come from the same thing. I mean, I did my dirt. But I think that one of the issues with us as OGs is that a lot of times OGs feel like because we have a past and, you know, that past is checkered, we did some dirty things, we feel like if we speak against it, we're being hypocrites. And that's not so, because it takes that wisdom to be imparted on the youngsters in order for them to get it. We can't sit back and withhold that information. We don't have that luxury. Mm-hmm. You know, our youth are reaching out. They're screaming for guidance. And if you notice, anytime you really talk to the youngsters, they always receive it because they respect who it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. But you got to be careful with the youngsters, too, because, you know, we are all young, too. And a lot of times it ain't about what you did in the past. So you got to watch how you tell somebody how you was and how you moved in the past, because it'll be hard to respect sometimes, especially if the receipt they looking at now don't look like all the stuff you've been talking about. So, you know, a lot of young kids, I got a lot around me, and the preaching don't really work. You got to kind of just show them how to move and how to articulate and how to speak to people, and just it be in a room full of women and not mean mug. And just, I got a lot of young cats. I'm just like, just trying to show how to move just by having them with me. But it's just like preaching to them, like, they just kind of got to hear about some of the stuff that you did. It's crazy how they got to, you know, it's just like, man, but coming out of your mouth, like, boy, I used to do this. Boy, you ain't. It's funny, man, because they just don't, man, an average 21-year-old, right. They just don't think they should stink, you know what I mean? And, you know what I mean? And it's a lot on their shoulders to prove that they with the gangster shit, you know what I'm saying? If that's where they come from, if they from the streets. So it's just like, I just be sleep wanting the young players around me not to play themselves off the streets, whether it be cemetery or penitentiary. Mm-hmm. Like, if you could just, like, dodge those things, you can make, and if you, you know what I'm saying, it's a, like, if you make a mistake and go to the penitentiary, you may get a chance. And if you make a mistake and go to the cemetery, it's
that's
over
the end
for
of the
you.
Story.
Yeah, right. It's over for you. Yeah. So.
What's going on with College Park Skyhawks?
Yeah. So Skyhawks is a it's in aligned with the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA. It's
the G League, right?
Yeah, it's a G League team. It's in my city that I come from, College Park, Georgia. I am a minority owner of the team.
God damn.
Yeah. They did a bubble last year as well for the G League, but we didn't participate in it. What the NBA did this year was they added three extra players to the roster. So now it's 18. It used to be like 15. Mm-hmm. And so the three people that – so with G League teams, you have some that play on – you should have some that play both to get more experience. You got like rookies or whoever you draft that play for the NBA team, and then they'll come down to the G League, kind of like baseball with the minor league. Basically, mm-hmm. that's what it is, the same concept. And so you'll have two-way players is what they call them. And so with the G League, we have I had one player from the G League actually sign with the Hawks. So that was like my dream come true, too, because it's still like an extension of me wanting to play in the NBA. You know, I ain't put nobody in the NBA, but like it was a – you know, I had something to do with, you know what I'm saying,
the process.
You know, dude obviously worked and got down his own. But, yeah, just being on a team where it's in my community, I'm able to be get back to my community. I'm able to initiate certain things is just a big thing for me. And then it makes me feel like I'm one step closer to be an owner of an NBA team or something like that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm getting my feet wet. They really receive me well. I'm partners with the actual owners of the Atlanta Hawks. So, man, it's just a lot of love being spread, you mm-hmm. know?
Mm-hmm. Wow, congratulations, bro.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
That's called diversifying, man. Mm. You know, you get the opportunity to make a power move, man, and you make the power move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of people that's stuck at a standstill, man. They see the power move, and they're looking at it, but they won't push the button, man.
Yeah.
And I commend you, and we commend you for pushing that button, man, and taking your career to the next level, man. You went from the basketball to the music. That was mm-hmm. just a springboard. And now you're going from the music to actually owning the team. And tell me about, like, you selling merch and concession and shit like that. You got a little stadium set up and everything?
Yeah, well, so the arena's owned by the Georgia World Congress Center, but I do have, shirts that I designed for the team.
Wow. Wow.
My son actually picked out the mascot. So it was like four or five mascots to choose from. So my son, you know, I had him in the meeting and he chose what mascot he thought, you know, we let a kid pick it. So
and how old is he?
He's 5 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. He's very articulate, very intelligent.
Yeah.
And just like his father.
You know, nah, man, you're a smart dude, right. man, for real. Right. So, yeah. I watched it.
Yeah, man.
I watched it, bro.
Just happening, man. A lot fucking of good dope. Things happening. A lot of business lining up. My boy told me it's called Divine Alignment.
Divine Alignment.
Yeah, because every day I get a different email about a partnership or something dealing with equity or some ownership nice. Or just some blessing. You know what I mean? They just mm-hmm. like coming, so... I think I'm gonna just continue doing what I'm doing because it's working. Whatever I'm doing,
man, push the button, baby. Don't slow down.
I think one of the things is working for you in your favor, you know, besides being talented and having the drive that you have, is that you're a likable person. You know, I don't really know. I haven't heard anybody like really saying any like projecting any type of negative energy on you.
It been nuts.
Yeah. So I think that has a whole lot to do with it because, you know, I see a lot of things going on in hip hop and, you know, losing a lot of our artists, to gun violence and a lot of it, if you look at a lot of the people that have been affected, it's directly related to the energy that surrounds them. And so mm-hmm. it seems like to me at least that, you know, you put, you know, yourself around some good energy.
You know, we try to. You know what I mean? Yeah. We all enjoy where we come from, so it'd be hard to disconnect. But, you know,
right.
As you mature and get a wife and kids, you start trying to see what that, you know, what other, you know, families got going on and start just thinking different, especially with the kids, man. Especially with me being attached to the kids, just trying to not let them down. No, that's the main thing for me. Not let them down. Not embarrass your family. Embarrass your wife. Embarrass mm-hmm. your mom. Embarrass your kid. So, you know, be be having to think twice before you make one decision. That's all it is. Mm-hmm.
Be able to think twice before you make one decision.
Yeah. What was that show you had changed?
Most expensive, that show, man.
What show you smoked?
Well, how much was that weed you smoked?
Man, I smoke weed every show.
No, man.
I've had different episodes where they done gave me gold. They done gave me all type of fucking shit and got me high right there on the spot. Like I'm like it's a microwave. But the show is called Most Expensive Is. I've done 4 years. I started on YouTube. Then somebody picked up the show.
God damn.
And then we were on Viceland right before, you know, obviously COVID hit and people couldn't travel. Yeah. But it's basically improv, you know what I'm saying? It's based on people to have something so expensive that other people don't see the value in it or don't know why they have it. And I actually meet them on camera. That's the show. Like, I don't know their name. I ain't never seen. I don't even know what they selling. So I come out there and be like, yo, I'm Willie D. I got it. $100,000 boxing glove, and I'd be like, why you got
what's
that?
The story behind it?
You know what I'm saying? And so just like anybody else, I want to, like, so my thing is like, why you love boxing so much? You done spent $100 on some glove and you trying to tell me got AC on the inside and it's fucking resist whatever. And I'm like, I'm either going for it or I'm not. I'm either saying, man, stop. That's cap.
Yeah,
and that's cap.
Yeah. Oh, I'm saying, you know, and so that's, and it's just like, it's just, imagine me, anybody for the first time on camera. Anybody, hey, how you doing?
No, blah, it's blah, funny blah, as
on
fuck.
Camera,
it's
you know what I'm saying? Boom, boom, boom. And just like, if somebody filmed that, you know, and so it seems to connect very well. And we're trying to see if we're going to crank it back up and where we go. You know, the traveling was prohibited, so it put it completely to a halt. But I get somebody, you know, said something to me about the show every day, so it did what it was supposed to.
Super dope.
Yeah, I read somewhere where you switched your diet to like some type of a plant-based lifestyle or something.
I was doing intermittent fasting. No, I don't eat plant-based. I talked to Chris Paul a lot. He's on plant-based and sent me some stuff. I don't eat beef or pork. I hadn't ate beef or pork since before it became a trend. I hadn't ate beef or pork. My dad used to tell the school I was allergic to pork, so I never really engaged in pork. And then I stopped eating beef early on when I was getting out of departments. Getting out of department. And then, so really I'm a seafood lover. And then occasionally I'll eat a turkey burger and maybe some lamb chop.
Mm.
But what I do is I work out 3 to 4 times a week. And I work out for maybe 3 to 4 sometimes in the afternoon. So I won't start my first meal till around 5. And from 5, I have an 8-hour window to eat. And that's called intermittent fasting. And I've been doing that sometimes. So before I go in the gym, I don't really eat anything. I might do a smoothie or something light. And then after that, I eat an 8-hour window and kind of just keep me at least fit or in shape enough not to be looking all crazy on stage and shit. My clothes fit right and everything.
I can't do it. See, my shit falling off me now.
Man, I see you over there. Looking just like you ready to take you some magazine pics, man.
I'm ready to take me some fucking steroids so I can beef back up. But nah, man, like I say, Chains, I'm so proud of what you do, man. What you did, how you did it, bro. This is amazing to see it. You know, it's amazing to witness, bro. That's fucking super dope, man. What's in the making, man? You think you're gonna record some more?
Oh yeah, I record every night.
No shit. Man, you said you're gonna send me some beats, man, but
be ready?
Maybe.
You ready?
Maybe.
I know you still got it, man. I like when you ramp up, you get to talking that real nothing, get that other voice and you get to ramping up. Mm-hmm.
I don't ramp up no more, man. Willie don't like that.
Why you don't like it, Willie?
I don't like what?
When I don't ramp up no more because I don't rap and shit.
I mean, shit. I don't like that.
Exactly. See?
Let's talk about Taheed Epps. you know, like we know, you know, we touched a little bit on, you know, high school and stuff like that, but like really, like what type of kid were you, man? Like, you know, and you say you found your basketball stroke at around seven, would you say 7 years old?
Yeah. I'm an only child. I'm an only child. Damn. I'm a mama's boy. That's where Titty Boy came from, just being up under my mama a lot coming up.
Okay.
My father, he was in the Army before I was born. And then when he got my mom, I just know he hustled. That's all I know. He hustled. And then they had dropped me off with my cousins when I was younger. They said I need to be tough. And my cousins raised me for a couple of years. And then I started just like, you know, getting back with them. I mean, getting back with my mom. We had a few issues going on in the household, but everybody was essentially blessed right now. My father passed in 2012 before I dropped my first album. That was my partner too. I picked him up from prison and moved him in with me, so we were best friends. He was a diabetic. I probably got trust issues like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I ain't trying to say I'm no bad kid or nothing like that. I just hustle and kind of people person, like I said, hustling was like, I guess, the darkest things I did. I wasn't like really into robbing or nothing like that. Like, you know, it's a couple people in the neighborhood, like that was their motive. I wasn't really into robbing. I like stealing. I ain't really fuck with the stealing. Although I stole cars or hung with a crew that stole cars.
That was like the craziest thing, like trying to steal a car. Because I didn't see a lot of money in stealing cars.
Gee, it's a lot of money in stealing cars.
I didn't see it. I didn't see the money in it. And I didn't see, I mean, maybe the whole car and you getting the whole car, but it just swap shops type money. Like, I couldn't see it. And also, you know, to go inside of a car, to steal that car, to break it down, to break that column and get that, jump that thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, to me, I just looked at that as very risky. Like, while you in there, somebody can walk up to you and just blow your head off. I mean, you got to concentrate on what you're doing. Wow, really, you know, crazy, you know, I'm just thinking
the going out getting cars, that's a whole nother conversation, man. But once again, it just who you around, man. It's like, that's why some people are surprised when they be like, oh, this kid from Compton went to Stanford. Or this kid from, they be so surprised because people from these areas don't go to these areas. These areas are already filled with people who come from a certain cloth, or so to speak, you know what I'm saying? And it was generalized a long time ago. We're actually breaking the mold right here in our face. You're actually seeing people break the mold and take chances and doing things that are uncharacteristic. But like, normally coming up, man, from wherever you from, like whatever your hobbies are, you know what I'm saying? When you talk about boxing, like, I follow you boxing, you boxing, J Print boxing. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's got to be a thing. You know what I'm saying? Like Philly, they got a boxing culture. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it really be like where you from, bro. I'm telling you, it's a real thing. That's why when you go to college and you be around a lot of people from different areas, you actually learn different. It's actually a good thing to do that.
Right.
Be in like a diverse place. You learn stuff from people. That's why I really started learning. When I went to college, I was like, damn, these folks from New York, these folks. And just really, you pick up on slang, how people, you know, attire, everything, man. So that's why, man, I'm right in the middle of why I want to tell people, man, I think you shouldn't be doing this. That's a stupid thing to do. But I'm sure that the people they're around all doing the same thing. And that's not to say you should be following them, but it's just hard to break that mold. It's hard. You know that one kid that don't drink or smoke to be around all the peers that drink and smoke? It don't exist. And if it do, he driving or doing something. But it really, like, everybody smoke. Everybody. It's just crazy how this shit go. It's just real. That's what it is, in my personal opinion.
Yeah.
We hang around. Shit, man. Everybody I know smoke, and if somebody was like, I'm sorry, I can't, then they probably won't be in the car with us. The driver, we done switched drivers since we've been down here. The driver couldn't take smoke. You got to go. We smoke. So that's all it was. It was no disrespect to him, but I'm paying this company to use their car. Somebody need to be able to take this.
Mm-hmm. Indica or?
Yeah, I've been smoking before they started putting names and flavors on. I wish they was this scientific when I was getting them bad-ass bags in. I could sold it to any one of these niggas who want a pretty little album covers they printing up now. But I like, somebody had to laugh. To get high.
You love to get high, yeah.
I like to get real high.
So how do and then we can cut it off, man, but all day long you just be high, dog?
No, I'm a functional. You know what I'm saying? I smoked before I came in here. I ain't ate nothing yet. I had a little smooth. I smoked for breakfast. I'm smoking up when I get up drunk. You know what I'm saying? And it's for me. I'm not trying to convince nobody else they should try it.
I'm gonna go smoke.
Don't need to smoke. You need to just goddamn, you know what you need to do, man.
Oh, goddamn.
Get you some pencil and a piece of paper, man. Get to jot down your ideas and your deliveries, Jack. You know what you need to do.
Man, we appreciate you, Chain.
All right.
The smoking thing, right?
I can tell you don't smoke weed. I can tell, man. You finna talk down. I'm ready for you. Come on. I'm ready for you, Jack.
Actually, I don't have a problem with. I don't smoke, but I don't have.
I know you don't.
But I don't have a problem with smokers. I really don't. But what I wanted to ask you about was that I know you probably had people come at you about perhaps starting your own strain or something.
A couple of things in the works with that and dispensaries and everything. I'm really trying to.
It's legal in Atlanta.
Indulge it. Not in Atlanta yet. They got medicinal, but they don't have recreational. But yeah, I'm trying to do that on the business side. And
what about the NFT? You got that going
on?
Yeah,
I'm working on NFTs as well as in. Educate myself on cryptocurrency as well, and
you talking to the man?
Oh, you the man?
I've been investing in crypto for probably about 6 years. I was an early investor in Dogecoin.
Really?
Yeah.
Rich motherfucker. That's how rich motherfuckers sit up when they just got some money sitting up there in the out. Look at them. Rich motherfucker. Look at
them. I hit a lick early, man. Like,
you did?
Yeah, early. So yeah, man. You.
So we'll say you got to put the game down.
Me and Nipsey used to talk crypto.
Sure enough.
Yeah.
The Nipsey was definitely on that shit.
Yeah, when Nip, I was when Nip got in, I can't remember the name of the crypto that he got into, but he partnered with some people. They gave him some crypto, and you know, so that he could basically promote it for them. And then I started turning them on to the other altcoins.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people don't even know about anything other than Bitcoin and Dogecoin. Mm. For a long time, people just heard about Bitcoin, but they didn't know the functionality of it. Mm-hmm. But Dogecoin came along and then it started like introducing people to, people started getting introduced to other coins like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
That's another coin out there besides Bitcoin. But those other coins out there are... many of the other coins out there are more riskier,
mm-hmm.
but you have a greater chance of Xing than you have with Bitcoin because Bitcoin has such a large market cap. A lot of people, when they think crypto, they try to buy the cheapest coin. Oh, this is just a penny, mm-hmm. you know, but they're not looking at the market cap. Yeah, it might be a penny, but if the market cap is already at, let's say, $100 billion, then it ain't like it's gonna go all the way up to $1 trillion or $2 trillion. It may get there, but it'll take a while to get there. Whereas other coins that have lower market caps, they have a greater chance of Xing because there's so much room to grow.
Okay.
So yeah, man. You know, you.
I can't wait to call you, man. Hit me up. I got some money. It's like gambling to me. I like to gamble.
It is.
I like to gamble though.
It's beautiful, man. I jumped on, the Elon coin is crazy, right? So I they got Elon Gate. This is a coin that's that's a pro Elon Musk coin, right? So they got Elon Gate, they got Fuck Elon, and then they got another coin called Stop Elon. So there's two anti Elon Musk coins, and then there's one
pro,
right? I'm investing in all of them. So I'm going to get them coming and going. So it's people that hate Elon Musk, and so they're betting against him, mm-hmm. and they're putting their money, investing their money into those coins that where they hate him, and then there are people that rolling with him, and they're investing in the Elon Gate. I'm investing in all three of them because mm-hmm. all three of them are going to basically hit. Mm-hmm. In fact, I already hit on the Fuck Elon coin once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I put up like 10 racks. And within 24 hours, I hit them for like 180.
Swell.
Yeah. The people that invest, they know. Mm-hmm. So when I say it, they know. Mm-hmm. They had the dates up. But yeah, I knocked the head off real quick. Mm-hmm. And then re-up. Do it again. Do it all over again.
That's amazing, man. Yeah. I love that, yeah, man. That's dope, I love that.
I'm not going to play with the Bitcoin. You see the guy in Australia? That he took all that money. Cut like $2 billion. They caught it. They saw him at the airport.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be very careful, man, because a lot of that stuff is
not the Bitcoin game.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is unregulated, mm-hmm. so you got to be very, very careful, and you got to do your research. But sometimes you just kind of take a chance, even on some of these coins that they're like joke coins. But you take a chance on it, like okay, you kind of do a little preliminary research mm-hmm. or whatever. Some coins people just invest in just because the name sounds good,
mm-hmm.
the name is catchy, right, mm-hmm. and. You know, say, for instance, you have a group of people who are, let's say, they're cat lovers, right? Mm. Like Dogecoin is like has a meme, a dog on it, right? So somebody put out a coin, let's say they're a cat lover, and they call it Cats
Meow
101 or whatever, meow, right? The cat lovers who are going to invest in that coin simply because they feel a certain sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
So I mess with all of them though. I mess with the low caps, the high caps, and the medium caps.
Dang, I'm a gamble with you. I like to gamble. Yeah. I'm a gamble with you. We do that. We gonna do that one weekend instead of going to Vegas. I'm
you play poker?
Yeah.
I do the blackjack, a little roulette, and you know I'm a dice shooter. I play but poker. I don't play poker.
I do.
You play poker?
Right.
Yeah. That boy smart. Well, you know, I'm going to take that back now. Everybody I know play poker ain't smart.
I'm finna go.
I got to go, y'all.
Right, I got to go too, man. Willie, man.
But you're smart. You're a smart one. You sharp, though, dog. You Brad Jordan. You a bad man.
That man bad. That Brad Jordan. Bad man. That Brad Jordan for real. Real y'all talk. Better fucking know that shit. Better
real talk, dog. Change.
Right hand, man.
Appreciate you, baby.
That's gonna wrap us up for the.
Hold on. We gotta address this real quick. Okay, Chains said right hand. I tried to give him my left hand. He said right hand. Right. What's wrong with the left hand?
It's disrespectful.
How?
And I'm left-handed.
It's disrespectful.
Okay, how?
I'm just disrespectful.
Do you home? Is it disrespectful?
Okay, now watch. Now watch this. If you were to get your left hand cut off, how much would you miss that left hand?
No, I do a lot of shit with my left hand. I do a lot of stuff with my left hand, bro. It's not that. We're just talking about as far as handshaking.
Would you
greed
be devastated if you lost your left hand?
I'd be devastated if I lost anything.
No. I'm talking about the left hand.
Anything. You the left like hand. I'm not like I'm gonna tell you, nah, I'm gonna be cool. I'm gonna be devastated. I know what you're saying. My left ear, my left finger.
Show the left hand some love, man.
I fuck with that left. It just, man, you know, universally, it's disrespectful. It's like when you go to a place like Qatar, you can't have your feet up on people's furniture just where they can see the sole of your feet. It's a disrespectful gesture. So you can't have your feet all, you know, up in there.
Qatar. Willie, give us a big word.
Ain't that crazy, man, when you go to different, like, countries and the people have different cultural expectations and stuff.
Well, at least when I went, they definitely was like,
man, and where's Qatar anyway? Where is Qatar?
It's over there.
I'm heading that way.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, 2 Chainz.
Yes.
Thank you, Chainz.
Thank you, man.
My boy. Yeah, man. I appreciate you coming out.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.